Welcome everyone into the third RA podcast. Today, July 18, we're gonna introduce you into another new segment. I will be your host for today. I'm Draco655. In the last episode we discussed about hardcore and softcore in depth. However, before we dive into today's topic, we want to clarify that softcore is not recommend setting to play on a multitude of reasons, primarily relied to breaking achievement logic, which can result in achievement not popping sometime. While softcore is a great tool to use for practice in the sense of safe states, we're gonna leave you a link for more information down below this video regarding softcore and why it's not recommended for achievement hunting. So today we're going to discuss about the usual, what we have played this week, and then we're going to jump into the discussion of this podcast, the racing game, and the question of the week. Let's start this episode with my co-hosts Shuzi and Ben Human. Hi guys.
Hey everybody, welcome back to episode 3 of the podcast.
Hey guys, I'm so excited to chat retro games with you again.
So let's start the first segment. How was your week so far, guys?
Mine was pretty good. Did decently well on points, so I'm pretty happy with how things finished out, and I got to actually have a lot of fun with some pretty charming Game Boy games as usual. So had a pretty good week so far.
Yeah, I had a pretty good week as well. I focused on Nintendo. We've got some NES, we got some SNES, we got some DS, so I'm excited to go in more detail about that with you guys.
My week was pretty good also. I did not get too much point this week, but I did a decent amount of fun, and the game I will give you to talk today was pretty interesting. So one of these was the M-Taro, MM Heartbreak. It's a little cute Amster games on GBA by Sporitide. I mean, this game is just so cute. You have a little cute Amsters. You just travel through some anywhere into like kitchens, undergrounds, anywheres, and you just like learn some new words, and then you have a devil who try to break every single one, ruining their fun and their love, and then you need to solve some mysteries, and then they just fall back love together, and that's a pretty awesome, just cute game. It was a long one. I did not expect to be like very long one, but there was pretty much like a 9-hour playthrough for me. But the game's overall is pretty charming. I just love those. I did not expect to having so much fun into those M-Taro games, but so far, I have nothing bad to say about it.
Yeah, the Hamtaro games are utterly delightful. I played the Game Boy Color one recently on Retro Achievements, and I come from a background of I've never really watched, I think it was an anime. Was Hamtaro an anime? I never really watched Hamtaro or got into the whole Hamtaro thing back in the day, but the games are just really cute and delightful. I would definitely recommend checking them out if you just want something that's cute and has some simple puzzle solving. It's a good time.
Yeah, and it's always interesting to me what sorts of games that you guys get into that I know absolutely nothing about. Because watching Draco play that, it was kind of interesting to see him go through it and just learn about different aspects of new games. And that's one of the cool things about, you know, Retro Achievements that we've talked about in the past, is just that even seeing people play other games, it kind of gets the wheels turning in your mind as far as, you know, what's out there and what games you might be looking at in the future, what potentially you might be playing down the road. And I know for me, kind of tying into that a little bit, one of the games that I ended up playing this week was a homebrew called Dedeus. I'm not sure how you say it, but I'll just throw this out there that I do not like horror games, like survival horror games at all. But this game, like, entranced me. I was just hooked. I played it for 7 hours. I completed all of the different endings to walk that back a little bit and give a little bit of some information on the game. So it's a homebrew Game Boy game. And it's a survival horror game of sorts. So there's 11 different endings. The achievements are to unlock all the different endings. There's a couple different item collection achievements mixed in there. But it's just such a, cool game to, depending on which characters you interact with on different days in the game, it changes the ending. The plot is that, your character has a bad dream that says that the world's going to end in 3 days by this Dedeus creature or whatever, this eyeball creature. And in each day, there's different things that you can do leading up to the third day that will alter the course of events or the outcome of the game. So it's just really great to play and have a lot of fun with and kind of discover all the different endings. And the artwork on it is just fantastic. I mean, if this came out as a Game Boy game in the past, because it's a homebrew, it's not an official game, but if this was a game that came out in the past, this would have been easily a killer title. It was just really, really fun. I had a ton of fun playing it. I can't say that enough. Can't stress it enough. So
that sounds like a really cool game, shoot. I'm not really a horror guy personally, but I can't imagine how hard it must be to pull off something like that effectively within the Game Boy's limitations. So that sounds like a really impressive homebrew accomplishment, that game. The first game I wanted to talk about this week was NES Donkey Kong. So this is the port of the arcade Donkey Kong on the NES. You know, it's one of those classic games. It's one of those games everyone knows. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. Before I played this on Retro Achievements, I played a little bit of Donkey Kong here and there. And I always thought that it was one of those games that's it's dated, it's old, it's not really that good by a modern perspective. But I have to say, playing it with achievements has really changed my perspective. There's this joy I experienced in, like, just playing through the game over and over and over, trying to get that perfect run. Because that's what the achievements boil down to, right? You're trying to get that perfect run. You're trying not to die. You're trying to get a certain number of points. You're trying to all of those sorts of things. You're trying to get through, you need to get through 5 loops of the game, and each loop it gets harder. And I've never really been a big fan of arcade-style games, you know, those games that are just focused on getting points, that loop, that get your score up. But something about having an arcade-style game with achievements is just the perfect combo that really hooked me. It really did. The most exciting moment for me was, so there's Game A and Game B, right? And Game B is more challenging than Game A. And there's an achievement for beating 5 loops of Game B. That's probably the most challenging achievement in the set. And there's also an achievement for beating the first 3 loops of Game B, Deathless. So I managed to beat 3 loops of Game B, Deathless. I just had the most amazing run. I made it to that same run, I made it to the beginning of loop 5 with no lives remaining. And then I managed to do all of loop 5 on that last life. And that was just the most amazing, the most hype moment. That was so exciting. So if you guys haven't played this one, I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah, speaking from experience with that set, because I have also mastered that set as well, that's always nice when you have, you do really well and you get concurrent, you know, you get concurrent lined up achievements, so you don't have to do multiple runs and you're efficient about things. And I'm also working on a different version of it for the 7800 Donkey Kong that is arguably a little bit more challenging than that one, that is really stressing me out with the loops 4 and 5 as far as how fast that spring moves in the second stage. And I share that passion about just having a fun, you know, fun arcade style game that you can work on and grind out while you're watching a stream or while you're listening to, you know, something in the background and just having something like that. But it's interesting that there's 3, 4, I think there's at least 3 versions of Donkey Kong and that style of game. There's the 2600, there's the 7800, and then there's, I think there's one other one that we've all mastered. So And it's also interesting, you know, you brought up something else that I thought was interesting or got me thinking about that game, is just the little slight changes as far as the movement in the games. Or it's always interesting to see over the different ports what those little slight differences are. And that's why I say that the 7800 is, in my mind, the craziest version, because with the 7800 version, you've got like the most insane spring in that second level that's just moving incredibly fast. And it's just like, is this even possible? It's just, but eventually I'm hoping to get that one down. But yeah, mastering that set, Bendy, props to you on that. That's not the easiest set in the world to master. So congratulations on your mastery of that.
Well, congrats on both of you guys to master those set, because I mean, for me, Donkey Kong, I tried a little bit the NES version, but I mean, I can do like the, I think I can beat like the game once or maybe two times, but those deathless achievements are very, very hard. And for someone who are not used to this game like me, I mean, you can find your little cheese to just like maybe like sit there where the trampoline to not get you, but those achievements are super hard. But speaking of another different game on NES, do you like Ninja guys? I mean, we need more ninja here. I play Kid Nikki Radical Ninjas on NES. It's a set by Kasumari. So this is a little ninja. It's pretty, the sprite of this game is pretty unique or different, but you travel for maybe like 8 to 9 stage different. The stage are pretty small. They have some very secret hidden, to be honest. I was not able to find any of those, but they're pretty hidden. You need to, and you have like a little like shuriken or tools, a weapon, and it just like keeps spinning. And the enemy was in, this is like almost like a Ninja Gaiden style. So if you like Ninja Guardians, this is pretty much the game for you. The game is not too difficult on its own, and the game is pretty generous to, you can just continue to play the game. But overall, I was a little bit surprised, and the last boss was something, because the last boss was he was shooting some fires, and you need to land into a specific place to not be caught by the fire, and you need to kill that boss like 3 or 4 times in a row into the same stage, and you have like 1 life every time because it's Ninja Gaiden. So the game was pretty hard, but it was pretty fun.
Yeah, that Kid Nikki is a lot of fun. I got an opportunity to play it and master it as well, and it's got kind of a unique charm to it, with just being like almost like a mini Ninja Gaiden of sorts. And the art style is kind of interesting, what they were able to do with the NES back then. I'm not sure when that particular title came out, but it's kind of interesting to see what the art style is like. I would imagine that probably is a little bit further down in the NES line. But I think over the years, because I was doing a little bit of research on that title, it's a little bit more... I don't know the exact word for it. I guess it's a little more down the line, or a little more further down in the NES collection. And that's the word I was thinking of, is cult classic. It's become like a cult classic. Like some movies, they kind of are considered kind of crummy initially, but then they become like a cult classic over time. But kind of going back into my week a little bit with what else I played, and talking about the charm of games and how they kind of hook you in and things like that, I got to play Gargoyle's Quest this week as well, which was pretty interesting. Another Game Boy game, of course, because that's what we're all about in my book. With Gargoyle's Quest, it was a platformer with some tiny RPG elements to it. Really like the art style for that game and the sprites. Pretty early on in the Game Boy line of games. It was made in 1990. And as far as the way that the achievements were broken up, it was broken up into damage lists. So doing each boss damage list, and then beating the game. The hardest achievement was beating the game without any checkpoints or passwords. So yeah, it's got a couple RPG elements to it, with different items that you use and equipped, different weapons that you equipped for different parts of the game. So an example of this, I guess, would be there's four weapons that you gather throughout the game, but only one of the weapons is able to break like these stones or like rocks that get in your way. So you have to sometimes switch to that weaker weapon just to be able to break the stones. And then one of the other interesting things is, so the gargoyle can fly, but he only has a limited time to do so. Over the course of the game, you upgrade your flight time, and eventually at the end of the game, you get infinite flight and very high jump as well. So you become very, very powerful, but at the start, you're very vulnerable. You only have 2 health. It's very easy to die. So my nerves were a little bit run shot on that game over list run. But I can tell you that, interestingly enough, the first time I played through the game, I went for all the damage list achievements. I didn't go for the game over list or the checkpoint list, because I didn't know the game, didn't know really what I was getting into. By doing all of the damage list boss achievements and kind of going through all the levels and having to do everything, wiping multiple times to all of the levels before even getting to the bosses and figuring out the best strategies for each different level, it prepared me really well for the game over list, which I was thankfully able to knock out in the first try. I had some close calls with the game over list, so no game overs, which create checkpoints, and no passwords either. But I was able to knock it out, and I was pretty happy, because I was thinking it was going to take me till at least Friday. I had a pretty long struggle with one of the bosses for damage list, but I managed to knock it out Thursday night and move on with my week. So I was pretty happy about that.
I'm glad that you brought up Gargoyle's Quest Shoot, because I feel like that's one of those series that people sort of sleep on. I mean, Demon's Crest is the most popular by far. People tend to know that game, and it's a fantastic game. But I feel like a lot of people don't realize that there was Gargoyle's Quest on Game Boy, and then there was a Gargoyle's Quest 2 on NES, both of which are fantastic games. So if anyone out there is listening and you haven't checked out this series, I would definitely recommend it, especially if you're one of those who has played Demon's Crest but hasn't seen the series before that point. They're pretty solid games. I would definitely recommend them. One other game I wanted to talk about this week is Mario & Luigi Partners in Time on the DS. This is a game that I played back in the day when it was new on my DS, and it's a game that I probably haven't played since then. I mean, I replayed it a few times, but I probably haven't played it in over a decade. And it's weird, right? Because I feel like the DS, part of me feels like the DS isn't really that old. It's the DS. It was just a few years ago. And then the other part of me feels like, well, actually, I think we're finally starting to get to that point where DS can be considered nostalgic. And that is so weird for me to say, but like, it's true. I feel like I'm starting to feel nostalgia for the DS. And so I feel like this game strikes that sweet spot of not too old, not too new. It just hits that perfect nostalgic part for me. And the crazy thing I noticed while playing this is it's a Mario and Luigi RPG, right? You have to dodge enemy attacks with good timing. And I found that even though I hadn't played it in so long, I still had the muscle memory for so many of the enemy attacks. I was able to just instinctively know, oh yeah, this is how this enemy's going to approach. This is when I have to press the button. It's crazy that I still remember that after all these years. And one other thing I wanted to say about this game is it's kind of regarded as the black sheep of the Mario and Luigi series. Like, a lot of people talk about how, oh, Superstar Saga was better, Bowser's Inside Story was better. But like, honestly, if you haven't played this one, I wouldn't let that deter you. It's still a really solid game, and it's definitely worth playing. It has a sort of weirdly dark tone for a Mario and Luigi game. Like, there's still a lot of comedy. It's still a Mario game, but it gets kind of dark at times, which is honestly kind of, it's weird, but it's kind of refreshing. So if you're looking for a Mario game that's something a little bit different, you guys should check this one out, especially now that it has achievements.
Oh, Benny, I'm so happy you bring this one up. I mean, I have played the GBA 1 version. I don't know like what the difference could be to the GBA and the DS one, but I would be pretty hyped to play it at some point, this set. And for my part, I'm not too much experienced with this Mario Luigi Partner in Time, but I was more experienced with the Bowser Inside Story 1, which I feel for me it was my childhood's take over than the other one because I did not spend less time with it. But I'm still hoping one day I'm going to see a wonderful set for the other one, Bowser Inside Story. And my third game I wanted to talk with you guys would be my F-Zero X. So that one is a special one because I did not expect to play that into my week. I did talk with a new friend of mine this week, was Craig Mako, and I saw him play the game, and the way he was like playing it and the way he was talking about it, I just wanted to give it a shot. After all, it's a racing game. I'm not great at F-Zero on like Super NES or NES or Game Boy. I'm not familiar with those type of racing game too much. And the reason I give it a shot is I feel like how the game looked like, it almost feel like Kirby Air Ride to me. And I was like, oh, the graphic looked great. It looked the same, almost same mechanic as Kirby Air Ride on the GameCube. Maybe give it a shot. So I started the game and I did like 3/4 of the game. But sadly for now, I put the game away for now because the expert achievement. So you have like Novice Cup, you have Standard Cup, and you have Expert. And I and Kermiko tell me we have, I think, like another more higher cup than Expert. And Expert are pretty, for like a guy who is very good at racing, I can tell that, oh man, I can tell that that's a pretty hard one. I mean, Expert is no joke. It's just difficult. I mean, I hope I would be able to put more time into it. But the set overall by Slashek is well done. But overall, I was very surprised about how the game plays out. And if you like Kirby Air Ride and stuff like this, I should recommend you this game because F-Zero X, it's pretty good.
Yeah, and it was interesting to watch you play through that one as well because I'm familiar with the F-Zero series, but pretty much only by name. I've never really watched or gotten into those games. So to see you play through it and kind of get to check that out, as I mentioned before, it's always cool to see what other people are playing and kind of open your mind to those possibilities of what else is out there on RA. And, you know, talking about speed and all that kind of got me thinking to one of the other titles that played over the last couple of weeks here, which was Mario versus DK, because we're talking about speed going fast, got me thinking about we talked a little bit about DK94 before and having those speedrun achievements. And what was interesting about playing Mario versus DK over the last couple of weeks is that rather than have speedrun achievements, the game takes everything that DK94 was. So Mario versus DK is a Game Boy Advance game. It's kind of like a futuristic or more advanced version of the DK94 game. And it's just really, really fun to have some new takes on an old, or to have a new twist, I guess, on an old game. The art style is kind of interesting because they've done a lot of interesting things with the Game Boy Advance and the art style to kind of further stuff with the Game Boy. But so in DK94, the achievements are for speedrun based, or primarily they're broken up into like collect all Pauline's items, and then speedrun the levels. So you basically do everything in a couple playthroughs. in the Mario versus DK, so the new game, but it has all the same old mechanics like backflip and all that stuff. It's just an updated version. There's no speedrun achievements, but the game is such that the times are very tight to be able to get stars. So you get a star rating based on collecting all the items in the level and then how fast you complete it and beating the high score. If you beat the high score and you collect all three of the items, you get a star, which is essentially the speedrun. So there aren't speedrun achievements per se, but because the achievements are to collect all of the, or to get stars on every level, you essentially have to speedrun the game or get the best possible times or pretty close to the best possible times on the level. So it was interesting to see how it was innately baked into the achievements. And I had a lot of fun with it. It's still got, you know, puzzle platforming elements to it. It's got a few new enemies, updated mechanics. My favorite, the laser beams that you have to time on the last world stages. They're great when I'm not dying to them every 10 seconds. But it was a really fun game to play. It was definitely a struggle. But I managed to complete it over, like, I think 4 or 5 days, which is certainly too long for me. But I still had a lot of fun with it. So, yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, that's awesome that you were able to master that set shoot, because that's a fairly challenging game, especially those expert levels or whatever they're called. You unlock these extra challenging levels near the end, and yeah, they can be quite challenging. But Mario vs. Donkey Kong is a great one. I should probably play that on RA. That's a game that I did play back in the day, but I never played it on RA, so maybe I'll have to get back to it. I don't think I ever 100% completed that game, actually. I think I just did the main story, and I don't think I did New Game Plus or the expert levels, so that should be a fun little challenge to return to. One final game I wanted to talk about real quick this week is Learn to Kaizo. So this is a ROM hack of Super Mario World, and basically what it is, I think I may have mentioned this on the podcast previously, is it's a hack that gradually teaches you Kaizo tricks, these extremely challenging tricks, but it eases you into them very gradually. So I've had this set mostly completed for quite a while now, and within this past week, I've been focusing on these last few achievements. One of the things I accomplished this week was the final test, which is the final level of the game, which basically puts together all the tricks you've learned up to this point in one super challenging level. And, like, we talk about these hype moments on RA. Beating this level is probably ranks up there, maybe one of the top 10 most hype moments on RA for me. It is just so insane how challenging this game is, and that for me, a guy who doesn't play Kaizo, was actually able to pull it off, just mind-blowing to me, so happy. So at this point, at the time of this recording, I only have one achievement left in this game, and it's to pull off a mid-air shell jump. And if anyone listening to this has played Kaizo Mario before, you know how tricky a mid-air shell jump is. It's just one trick, I just need to pull it off one time. But the timing, the execution is so, so specific. So I'm going to keep trying. I hope I could pull this one off because I really, really want to master this set. But man, this is a big hurdle to overcome. So we'll see if I can do it.
Well, for that, oh my God, I cannot believe we're talking about this set right now by Zero. To be honest, Benny, I hope you're going to get it. For people actually don't know how it's for the mid-air shell jump, it's basically you need to run with Mario, and when you get the full speed, you need to grab a shell at the end, like almost before you jump. And then you jump with the shell, you need to tap a little bit left. After tapping left into your controller, you need to release the left button, and you need to re-go into the right and directly putting the shell, like almost like kicking the shell in front of you. Like it's like almost like I would say like 180 degrees. You do like left, right real fast. And then if you're lucky enough, and if the frame is perfect, because I think it's just like a little frame, if you got it, the Mario gonna gain an instantly high jumps. And that took me 30 minutes to achieve, just little one. I was super, very lucky, I guess. But I have tried it to another Kaizo game because I did another Kaizo one. I think it was like DGR one, as I was mentioned, and I needed to pull out the mid-air shell jump as well. I could use a Yoshi to get there, but I wanted to do with the fam, like I said, just doing like the actual trick. And it took me 3 hours that time to pull it out like two or three times and fail. But the last one I succeed. But oh boy, that Learn to Kaizo is like one of the game I wanted to be on or always. Like I think I mentioned to Sierra the day, or I don't know. I mentioned to him like, I wish I can have this kind of set to just play and just like learn how to play Kaizo. Maybe that will bring me more wanted to play more Kaizo, and I think that's maybe why it picked up the game, if I remember correctly. But yeah, that was a very fun experience. I'm very happy to you can do it. I'm pretty sure Benny can do it. Into my last game of today, I wanted to talk about Pokemon. Yes, a Pokemon game to talk about, but not the traditional Pokemon you like, guys. It's not that. It's Pokemon Yellow on NES by Miki. NES. Yeah, maybe some people was like, wait, does Pokemon exist on NES? Actually, yeah. I mean, that game is very different in some ways. You don't have a run button at all. And sometimes the character runs and sometimes he doesn't run, which is pretty funny. And in some ways, the game is pretty much the same as the Yellow one. But they have added some Gen 2 Pokemon, not a ton, but the Pokédex is like 155. So they added like Lugia, Ho-Oh, Raikus, like all just the legendaries basically. And into that specific games, you have the possibility to every time you beat the trainers or beat a random Pokemon, get an extra items. Yes. An items which on Pokemons you cannot get from any beating Pokemons or beating trainers. So you can get potions, you can get rare candies, you can get stones, you can get TMs. TMs is an ability to you can learn from your Pokemon. So I remember so basically why I'm talking about this one is like I have done the entire game one time. And I did go to capturing Mewtwo's into the cave. And then after that, they give me like a pass travel to get to the Naval Rock. So I did go there and I catch my Lugia because I wanted to. And then I decided to fly because I didn't get any more Pokeballs. So I decided to go and rest and maybe come back later on. I did the lead four like in second time and I beat the game second time. And then I wanted to go back. And then I realized the game did not wanted me to go there. I was like, why, what happened in there? And I figured out that even on the forum, they said you can only use this pass one time and you need to do it in one travel. I was like, oh, is that a thing? Oh, that's bad. Because I needed to capture one legendary dog there. I needed to catch one more legendary Pokemon. And I needed to do a couple evolution there or capturing other Pokemon to complete my Pokedex. I was like, oh, okay. And then I restarted again the game. And I right now, as we talk, I managed to do an entire game maybe in 2 days, just roughly 2 days. And the first team I got was Earthquake, and I was super hyped about it because Earthquake is so good. But yeah, that's my Pokemon adventure there.
Yeah, and it's always frustrating when you make it through a bunch of progression in a game and you end up having some oversight or end up missing something that, ultimately can cost you a lot of time. Including an entire playthrough. I discussed this a little bit, I think, on a previous episode, talking about Final Fantasy Legend and accidentally saving in Machine's room and having to replay through the game. And also for Final Fantasy Legend 3, accidentally not realizing that the one of the achievements had popped for the boss, killing the boss, and then putting myself in a bad spot like that. But it's always... it's always tricky when, you know, I know the three of us, we prefer not to look things up. If we have to look things up, certainly don't mind doing that, but it's always frustrating to miss something like that and have to go through an entire playthrough, even as much as we love the games, because, you know, obviously want to be a little bit time efficient to be competitive with gaining points. So I do feel your struggle on that, Draco. I sincerely do.
Okay, so we have a beautiful, I think it's time for the other segment. So I'm very I'm very happy to doing this segment. We came up with a new segment, and those segment would be like a discussion, and we're gonna talk about every single of those in the futures type of games. But today we're gonna introduce with the racing game. So the racing game, let's start by the first, shall we? So the first I want to talk here is the Atari one. So I don't know if you ever played the example Pole Position. So Pole Position is one of the racing game. I did try it, but this is like a game where you have one car in the middle and you just need to move like left and a little bit to right, and then trying to dodge every single enemies. And it's like almost like a point A to B. And then you just like, I mean, it's weird. It's like if you compare like every single racing game that exists, this is pretty much, I feel this is pretty much the first ever like type of like guide to a racing game was like really like just the screen moving a little bit like left to right. And you need to just, so what do you think about that type of game?
It's cool that you bring up Pole Position, Draco. I actually played that one back in the day. I remember on the N64, I had a cartridge. I forget what it was called exactly, but it was a collection of Namco games. So it had like Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man, Galaga, Galaxian, all that stuff. And it, one of the games that was included in that is Pole Position. And I feel like it's a game that I didn't really appreciate when I was a kid because, you know, on the same console, I could play Mario Kart 64, so why would I spend my time playing Pole Position? But I actually went back and played Pole Position on Retro Achievements, and yeah, it's a pretty solid little game. Like, even though it's so old, it's still fun by today's standards. Another one I wanted to bring up, as long as we're talking about the 2600, is I think it's called Enduro. Enduro, and it's another just classic Atari racing game. There's not really much to say about it. It's very simplistic, but if you like Atari and you like racing games, it's another one I'd like to throw out there that I would recommend you guys check out.
So mention, like I said, like about Enduro and Pole Position, how do you feel, guys, to just play a racing games but it feel like it's like you don't control the car that much? I mean, it's not like the 3D aspect of it. It's like, it's just like a general, like little, just like just moving a little bit and just tapping a little bit. How do you feel as a player play those type of racing game?
So with 2D racing games, it's interesting you guys mentioned that. I have not tried Pole Position, but I did grow up with a few 2D racing games. One that comes to mind is, I think it's called F1 Race for Game Boy, of course. And F1 Race is kind of like that in that, you know, it's 2D, so you kind of have to just tap and be as accurate as you can. But I think that's one of the interesting things about the evolution of racing games is making the player feel more like they're in control. You know, going from 2D to 3D and adding in like slides or whatever and different things like that. And then obviously a lot of arcade style racing games have the items aspect and, you know, being on point with your items, timing your items effectively. And I mean, we could go into obviously a whole discussion about that in itself. But yeah, it's really interesting with 2D games that you feel a lot less in control. And you have to be a little more, I don't know, I guess you kind of have to fill in the blanks in your mind as far as the control and just using what's in front of you and, you know, trying to be as accurate as possible. Look at the pixels, look at the way that the tracks are set up, try and think about that or whatever the game gives you as far as the UI so that you can be successful with those games.
Another very interesting aspect is, like, I know Shoot is a very fanatic of those Game Boy style, but I know, and I saw you play the Micro Machine type of racing game. I mean, look this way. Those like typical racing game when you just look like the game into like a high position of the track, it's like you don't know where you go too much. You need almost to, at the last moment, improvise where you need to go, and you try your best to survive. I'm not a fan into those type of Micro Machine games. I feel they are like extremely hard. I think I almost prefer to having like moving left to right, like the pole position type scenario of games. But Micro Machines, man, how do you feel about those?
So if we're talking about Game Boy and we're talking about racing games with that top-down perspective like Micro Machines have, I have to give a shout out to one of my childhood games, Mickey's Racing Adventure. So, you know, it's Mickey Mouse, it's a Disney game, but man, I adore this game. It's made by Rare, actually, so you know it's good. They always make good games. And basically, what's so fascinating about this game is, even though it's called Mickey's Racing Adventure, it's not just a racing game, it's an adventure game that happens to have racing. And what I mean by that is, like, okay, yeah, there's racing, but there's also so many other aspects to this game. There's an overworld, there's like items to collect, there's characters to talk to, there's different playable characters, there's these little mini games where you play as Pluto that completely change the gameplay. And it's basically just, it's this fascinating little part of my childhood. And it has achievements, so if anyone wants to check it out, it does have achievements. But I don't know, it just, I really like when racing games take it one step beyond, where they aren't just racing games, but they're racing games with a twist. You know what I'm saying? Does anyone have any other examples of stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, that is really the sticking point for me with racing games, because by default, not a big fan of racing games. But here's the caveat. If the game has a good story mode or adventure mode that tricks my brain into thinking, okay, this is more than a racing game, I will play it 100%. You know, Diddy Kong Racing, we've talked about this a couple times in the past, but Diddy Kong Racing, just the way it's set up with the overworld and kind of exploring and, you know, finding the hidden keys in each stage, and there's boss fights like that. In my mind, it's a racing game, obviously, but when games are clever and they kind of trick you into, I mean, not maybe trick isn't the right word, but in my mind, it's tricking my brain, because I don't like racing games. I'll just be blunt about it. I do not like racing games. But if the game can make me feel like I'm collecting stuff, like I'm kind of going on an adventure, like there's some element of overworld or whatever, then I just get hooked into them. I mean, I know that the Need for Speed series over the course of years has done that pretty well. And that also comes to mind. But yeah, I mean, if a racing game has those little elements where you feel like you're in an overworld or going about kind of collecting things, doing different things that aren't strictly set to racing, then it always is a fun game to play. Diddy Kong Racing is, I would say, probably my favorite racing game, just because of that reason.
It seems like we keep coming back to Diddy Kong Racing, but I feel like there's a good reason for that. It's just that good of a game. And here's the thing. I like to think about the historical context of games, right? So you think about what Rare was going through when they were making Diddy Kong Racing. They were thinking, we're making a game that has to directly compete with Mario Kart 64. There's going to be a lot of similarities between these two games. What can we do to make our game stand apart? What can we do to make our game something that people will remember, people will keep coming back to? And I think you hit the nail on the head, Shoot, with the adventure mode, with the bosses, and even the racing mechanics. We didn't even really talk about mechanics, but I feel like mechanically, I don't know, maybe I'm mistaken on this, but I really like the mechanics of Diddy Kong Racing. I feel like it's a little more skill-based than Mario Kart 64. I don't know, I might get some flack for saying that, but that's just my personal opinion. And there's just something satisfying about the racing in that game, the way the items work in that game, the boost mechanic in that game. There's a lot of little nuance, a lot of little things to master. It almost reminds me of like, to give another example of a Mario Kart competitor, Crash Team Racing on PlayStation, right? There's a game that knows it's competing with Mario Kart, and it asked the question, how can we implement some mechanics that change things up so that we're not just a Mario Kart clone, but we have some nuance to the racing that makes things unique. The boost mechanic in that game is so good. It takes a while for it to click, but once it clicks, that is a fantastic racing game.
Obviously, the biggest like jumps between like you take just like this Atari games and then you transform it almost into the Micro Machine and then you transform it almost like into a super the Super Nintendo have some quite like crazy more unique like Super Mario Kart, I would say, like Super Mario Kart where you just like you can move actual your cars, like you can almost like rotate to 360. That was pretty good like evolution theirs. And the game is fairly good, but like the maps, like if you compare the maps to like it still like stayed like the same standards. It's like almost like flat map, and just like you just almost like driving to nothing. But then if you compare now the what you all you two of you talking about right now, it's like you just like jumps into another aspect of the racing game where you have fully control to your card. And then the overworld is just stunning and stunning. So you can see like how much the game have progressed and grew up. Like those wave racer games, like surfing, with like it's just like a like almost like a sport machine kart and different with waters. And then you go for like snowboarding. And that's another good example. You have Mario Kart, which is pretty good. Diddy Kong obviously would be considered like one of the best because with the unique styles of items, unique styles of cute characters, awesome music, and obviously the boss, which is pretty good. But if you compare the how the racing have grown up, that's quite like surprising. So it's like if you want to how do you so if you're yourself, do you think would be better? It's like what do you think would be like the best unique what do you like about it? It's for the controls, I mean.
I think for me, for controls, as far as racing games are concerned, one of the things that I always think about a little bit is the turning is always a big thing. Do I have to do L and R to turn? How is the slide like? How is this the sliding? Like, what's that like? You brought up Micro Machines and it being like a 3D top down and the sliding just. I think at some point I'm going to master that title because it is a Game Boy game, but it's a little bit too much for me to deal with right now at this point. And the other thing that that comes to mind is the type of vehicle you're in and how the maps interact with the vehicle. So, standard racing game, you're in a car or a cart, right? But then you've got games like Diddy Kong where you've got all three. So you've got boats or hovercrafts is the more accurate term, planes and cars. And for me, I think of all three things between air, land, and sea. Land is always going to be my favorite because it's just stuff is weird for retro games with like interaction between boats and flying mechanics. It's always very odd. It was kind of hard for them back in the day to get the balance right. So those are probably the two biggest things I think about when I'm playing like an older game. First of all, if it's got different types of vehicles, is how does that interact with the environment of the map? And then also, you know, what's the turning like? Because turning is one of the biggest factors, it seems like, in being successful. Do you tap to turn? Do you use like a slide style turn with the L or the R button, depending on the system? Like, what is the strat to have the best turning as far as those tight corners and things like that, that a lot of tracks you encounter do have in retro games and in game racing games in general, really, is those tight turns and things like that. So
I think for me, when it comes to racing games, I want something that's, how do I put this? It feels easy at first, like it's easy to latch onto the racing controls, but it's difficult to master. I don't know if you guys have ever had the experience of playing a racing game where you pick up the game for the first time, you're playing it for the first time, you hop in your car, your vehicle, whatever it may be, and you immediately feel like, wow, this game controls like garbage. Because I've definitely played a few of those where the controls are just immediately off-putting. I feel like in order for a racing game to be successful, it needs to be immediately accessible, but at the same time, it needs to have that high skill ceiling to be really satisfying, right? It needs to be easy to get into, but hard to master. I feel like it's a very simple point I'm making, and I'm probably making it sound more complicated than it is, but there's something about racing games in particular where if you're trying to drive a car, you know, driving a car is something we could relate to in real life. We know what it's supposed to feel like. So when you pick up a game and it doesn't feel the way that it's supposed to feel like, it could be incredibly off-putting. So that's kind of a sticking point for me personally.
You make a very good point, Bindi, here about that type of control or how the card or anything will be like just playing. I mean, like when I did look for F-Zero, that was like one of the first mark or the first I have the eye on, because I wanted to feel it controlled good and it was not too hard to play. Because I like, when I play racing games, I like very much the angles of it or how it play out or how you can just play out and not too much difficult. But if I compare it to some like older games, like those, the pole position example and stuff like this, I mean, those games are pretty simple in some ways, but the control of those are very, very hard in my mind compared to what I'm used to, because I'm a very big racer fan. And it's almost like the same stuff as Micro Machine. Micro Machine, I'm just not able to play very good because I don't know like what is coming up like right now. It's like always like very short, or it's like if you're too fast, you're just gonna like go up and down, or you don't know, you lose track of where you are compared like other stuff. And a little just question, just I wanted to bring up to you guys, to you two. I don't know if you ever play arcade games. So when I was younger, I did some with my dad. I did some to an arcade store, and then I have found a couple of games. But the games I really was enjoying the most was really like where I can sit down, because the arcade is so massive. You can sit down and you have like a wheel in front of you, and you can play some racing game. And I don't remember the name of those racing games did I play. But it was almost like the same aspect to pole position kind of styles, where you can control your vehicle pretty damn good, and it would never stop, I believe, until you ran out of times. And they have like almost California speed. So this is pretty much like where you point A to point B or infinite, because it's an arcade game. And it was super just damn fun to play those games. And I don't know if you ever experienced some of those when you were younger, guys.
Yeah, I have actually. Unfortunately, I do live in a small town, so we don't have much in the way of arcades. But one arcade game I do remember is Cruisin' USA. I don't know if you guys have played that one, Cruisin' USA. It's basically, you know, it's a racing game, and you race across all these different locations in the United States. But I think something you bring up that makes those arcade racing games really special is the fact that you have the wheel, the fact that you're controlling it with an actual wheel. And I know that there's a lot of racing game purists out there who, even on their home console racing games, they like to play with a wheel. And honestly, I can understand why. It's really a unique experience. Like, I remember it's kind of silly, but I remember when Mario Kart Wii came out, I used to always play that with the wheel because it was so novel. It wasn't really a wheel. It was literally just a Wii remote placed inside a plastic shell. But there was something about simulating that experience of playing in the arcade that was really exciting to me. So, what about you, Shoot and Draco? Do you guys have any other experiences with arcade racing games?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, you know, there was, when we go to the movies or things like that, there would be, you know, maybe about 5, 6, 7 machines outside, right outside the theater, that, you know, in that lobby area where people would play games. And one of those was like a racing game. And I think for me, the thing about racing games where you have the actual wheel and the pedal and stuff is like, it just feels so like in your face and like big and like, you know, no matter what, I'm bad at racing games in general. Like I said, I'm not great at them, but like, it just feels like everything's coming at you too fast. I mean, sometimes, you know, like when you're driving a car in real life, things do not happen that fast, except if you're on like the freeway. Granted, they're racing games, so typically you're set up on a track. Your goal is to go as fast as possible. But I think that if I played a like arcade style game with the actual wheel and the pedal and all that, I'd get better over time. And maybe I'm just gunning it too fast on the pedal, but I have had experiences with those games in the past. I've definitely played them. I've never been great at them, but it's kind of fun just to, you know, to goof around after we like goof around after a movie, play the different arcade machines. They'd play like the, I want to say that I played Cruisin' USA or whatever, was maybe one of them, but I can't remember what the name of the titles of some of the arcade machines with the wheel and the pedal we played, but I definitely did. I have played those growing up as a kid for sure. So
for myself, I don't even remember Doll's name at all for the arcade. I'm very sad to did not find it out, but so let's talk a little bit about more modern racing game at we are right now, like pretty much like GameCube, Wii U, Switch games of racing. So it's like, I think for me, the biggest jump into racing from N64 and when the GameCube console came out was really like the Need for Speed Underground games. I played Most Wanted, I played 1 and a 2. And that particular racing game, when I can see like customizing my vehicle pretty much with the nitros, the boost, the colors, seeing the decor, the music, and then those like very like good tracks, unique, the good you can like with boosting everything, I feel into that particular type of game, I was so amazed. I really enjoy. I cannot wait to see in the future if already gonna bring those GameCube, and I'm definitely like, I hope that would be some people will go with those game. Because I don't know how to describe how enjoy just like seeing the progress to an N64 Diddy Kong Racing games. And then I jump into that sensation of almost real life, real driving, the controller extremely precise. You can do very good turning and stuff. You can do draft and almost like the other like Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto is another type of games where I never played that much. But I know the game is pretty good, but yeah, a lot of those type of games. So what do you think about?
I think it's interesting that you bring up GTA, Draco, because I was just thinking about this interesting trend we've seen with racing games as we start to talk about the newer consoles, the newer generations. I think it started with GTA, where we started to see a lot of these games that, I don't know if you would qualify them as racing game, but they're games where racing is a very big component of the game, but they take place in an open world. So you have stuff like GTA or like The Simpsons Hit and Run, where racing is a big focus, but not necessarily the only thing that you do. But then you also have stuff like, say, Burnout Paradise or The Crew, where it is sort of a straight up racing game, but it still has this open world feel. And honestly, it's I have mixed feelings about these sort of games. It's like they're really cool. It's a cool take on the racing genre, but at the same time, sometimes I don't want an open world. Sometimes I just want to go on some races, just select a track, go on a race. But then on the other hand, it's like, well, why not try something new with racing games? We've had the traditional racing games so many times before. Why not try something new? So I kind of go back and forth. I guess for me, it depends on what I'm in the mood to play. But it's interesting how so many different games have taken this concept of racing game with a twist and applied that concept in so many different ways.
Yeah, and I'm familiar with the Burnout games. I've never played them. Need for Speed, and talking about that, I feel like that particular series, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but I think I haven't played a lot of Need for Speed games. I remember playing one growing up. I don't remember which one it was. It was probably maybe late 90s, early 2000s, but with racing games, we've talked about, you know, that twist, and maybe that's it, Bendy. You know, maybe that's what really draws me in. Maybe that's the perfect word to describe it, is that twist or that element that takes you outside of the racing element. I mean, you look at like some very modern racing games today, and there was, you know, in the past it was like, you're never leaving the car. You're always stuck in the car. And now you've got it to the point with like racing games today where like you're leaving the car, you're going into the open world, you're doing whatever, and, you know, extracting the or separating the player and the car and giving them access to a map via just regular movement is something that I think racing games are going towards, because they want to give players more freedom, and they feel like if they're just bound to the car, then they feel a little bit trapped. You know, people, I guess there's a reasonable ground for debate on that, because I think people who are purist with racing are very, very just very focused on the racing aspect of the games might not enjoy that as much. But I think there's probably a good middle ground between like exploration of the game's adventure modes, so to speak, or the game's quests or whatever it may have, and that racing element. And I think that Need for Speed has probably struck a pretty good balance with that over the years. I think they've gone maybe a bit overboard on certain games that I know of, because I have friends that are pretty into racing games that have made some jests at that in the past before. But yeah, I think there's definitely a fine balance to be struck with, you know, the pure focus on racing, the twists, the so to speak, and the elements, and then kind of mixing the two together to produce a game that has good elements of both.
Interesting there. I'm just wondering, just for those, did you ever experiment like a racing game into a Destruction Derby styles, where it's almost like dirt, almost like or like just motorcycle racing game, or snowboarding racing game, like every like type of sport are like very different, and it's like not usual, but like very like almost like for me it's like very Destruction Derby. I mean, I think I did like, or Fallout. I think Fallout is one of those. Is it? I don't remember. But yeah, I have experienced like so much like sport racing game different than what I'm used to, and it's another like facet of the racing which just literally like blow my mind. So do you have any thoughts about those type of game?
Yeah, absolutely. Vehicular combat, I guess, is what a lot of people would refer to it as, the technical term. And games that have vehicular combat in some capacity, example would be, you know, we discussed this, I think, on the last episode, but Mario Kart 64 has got battle modes, but then you've got games that they're literally pure vehicular combat. A game that comes to mind is Twisted Metal. I think all four Twisted Metals have achievements available for them on retro achievements that I know of. I started Twisted Metal 1. I would really like to get back to that, because people have talked me up Twisted Metal to me over the years. And when I checked it out, I was like, okay, this is awesome. Like, just just there's no racing elements to the game that I know of. I might be misspeaking on that, so don't quote me on that, but it's, I think it's just pure vehicular combat. You know, getting items and getting into, like Draco said, that destruction derby mode of just killing the other players, destroying all their health, using power-ups, knowing the maps, knowing the best spots to do that in. So I think vehicular combat is such a unique genre, but when it's done well, it's just, it's an absolute blast. Like, it's, when it's done well, it's done really well. And I think Twisted Metal, I haven't got an opportunity to play the other three. I know for a fact, though, that I am going to come back to that at some point, I hope soon, because when I did play Twisted Metal, I maybe only got 5, 6, 7 of the achievements. I think there's about 40 or 50 for the first one, but I was having a lot of fun. I like vehicular combat, and getting introduced to that is a really, it's a cool genre and it's very unique. So,
yeah, I have very fond memories of, I guess you could consider it a vehicular combat sort of game, Carmageddon. I played this back in the day. I played the PC version, the first Carmageddon. I'm not sure if it was ever released on consoles or not. I would have to do a little research and get back to you guys on that one. But Carmageddon is a really cool game. And one of the things I remember about the game is there are two ways to win a race. Either you could win the race, like you could just get first place, or you could destroy all of your opponent's vehicles. And I always thought it was really cool that you have that option. And another thing about that game is it just had a really good sense of style. Like, you know how sometimes you load up a game and you're just like, oh, this game is overloaded with personality. This game perfectly captures this specific kind of style. Well, that's what Carmageddon was. It was very extreme. It was very over the top. It's a game that knew exactly what it's trying to be. And if you want just kind of like a zany game that's going to make you feel good to blow some stuff up, and it isn't afraid to be a little over the top, a little goofy, it's a pretty fun one.
So before we go into the next segment, I'm just thinking about something I'm very, very curious to see about the audience think about this one question I have in mind, and even Shoot and Bendy about this one. If you can pick every single game that exists into a racing game, and what is your favorite one? Just choose one. I know it's hard, but I'm very curious to see in the comment after this video what people will think about one racing game they have in mind. Mine would be, I guess, would be obviously Mario Kart 8 would be my favorite because I speedrun it and I've played way too much. That was close call with Need for Speed Underground, but I would stick with my Mario Kart.
I hate to be that guy and copy your answer, but honestly, when you said favorite racing game, the first thing that came to mind is Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. I mean, Mario Kart has always been my favorite racing game, and over the years, I flip-flopped on what my favorite one in the series is, but I feel like Mario Kart 8, specifically Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, just perfectly captures everything I love about Mario Kart. It's just, it's the best one. It has the best controls. It has a good lineup of characters, a good lineup of tracks, a good lineup of it's solid. It's a solid, solid game, man. I absolutely love that one. Shoot, do you have a favorite racing game in mind? I know it's a pretty challenging question, but I'm wondering where you might come from on this one.
Yeah, I would say it's Diddy Kong Racing is up there for sure. But there's one other game that comes to mind that I played a little bit as a kid. I remember getting it as a gift, I think, for a birthday. I don't remember how old I was. One of my friends gave it to me. It was Wipeout 64. It kind of reminds me a little bit of of F-Zero with the futuristic racing style elements to it. But, you know, Wipeout 64, you're piloting these, like, weird spaceships on tracks that are going really fast. There's items, too. So there's that combat element to it. And I don't think there's achievements for that. But that would be interesting to see if that ever does come about someday. Because I remember playing that game back in the day and having a lot of fun with it. And, I remember the struggle of, I think you needed like a memory pack for that particular game. So my progress wasn't getting saved. We didn't have a memory pack. But I think that would probably come pretty close to Diddy Kong Racing just for good memories. And the weapons were like it was like futuristic racing, so the weapons were like really cool. Like, I don't know how to describe the system. I guess there was like a, you know how in games that have items, you'll have like that box where it shows you what item you have. So like in Wipeout 64, there's that box. And then there's different shapes in the box. So it doesn't give you an image or an icon of the item, but it shows like if you picture an eight, like the number eight, but then it's broken up into like eight different pieces to put it together, kind of like a puzzle. And then depending on which ones are filled in, that's the item you have. So you had to kind of memorize the symbols of what was what in that game. But I remember good memories of that. And then also, who doesn't love like an announcer who's, you know, over the top in a game like that, who's like round one or whatever, or lap one or whatever. And just that over the top announcer coupled with the futuristic racing, there's just something about it. So I think that's actually kind of a closer tie than I thought between that and Diddy Kong Racing for me, at least.
Wow, that's very interesting, both of you. I'm very surprised by both of your answer there. And I'm very curious to see how the audience will put what is your favorite. So make sure to post after this video, make sure to say what is your favorite racing game. So it's time for question of the week. So question of the week was won by Dr. Pixel. So he said, what achievement did you like most? What achievement did you like less? Bendy, do you have like something about it?
Yeah, so it's very difficult to choose just one achievement for each. So I actually came with a few prepared to talk about this week. For me, I know I've mentioned this a few times on the podcast before, but I love when an achievement gives me that really hype feeling. When I'm going for the achievement, I could feel my heart racing and that amazing feeling of satisfaction when I finally earn it. And one of the achievements that embodies this feeling the best is in Super Mario All-Stars. This achievement is by Brian, and the achievement is titled Sweet Dreams, Complete Super Mario Bros. 2 Without Dying. And you may be thinking, well, it's just Mario 2. That's not that hard, right? And you could use warps. But man, that game is harder than you think to beat it without dying. This is an achievement that I spent hours on, just trying it over and over and over to get that perfect run. And I had multiple situations where I died on the very last level or really close to the end. So this was one of those achievements where when I finally earned it, it was just so exciting, so hype, such an incredible moment. How about you guys? What are some of your favorite achievements?
Yeah, I think for me, for favorite achievements, or, you know, you talk about those hype moments where you just really give it your all and you get that 25 or that 50 point achievement and you're just like, hell yeah. And I think a couple of those for me is, or at least one of them that comes to mind right away is, it's called, True Mastery. It's an achievement in the Addams Family for Game Boy set by MoPain85. And, it is complete all bosses without losing a life. And, kind of did the same strategy that I talked about with Gargoyle's Quest, where I went for all the damage lists, put the pieces of the puzzle together, learn the entire game by doing each boss damage list, and then on the following playthrough, do the deathless run. And I remember getting, because I do have this moment recorded of getting to Tully. He's the last boss in Adam's Family. He's like the evil lawyer that's trying to take their house or whatever. And you have like four hearts, but they aren't static, like 25 50 75 100. So each has like a almost like a hidden numeric value to it as far as damage. Like they get drained and they have like different how do I put this? They have like, it's not black and white when it comes to the heart value. It's not like you have it or you don't. There's like, it can be partially filled depending on how much damage you took. And I remember getting to Tully and the jumps, first of all, getting the jumps to Tully, there are some pretty annoying jumps that if you mess up, especially with inputs, can potentially get eaten or there's input delay. That last room before Tully is really scary. And then getting to Tully, I remember pausing, taking a second and just saying, okay, just focus up, you know. And I remember when I was fighting Tully, not a hard boss fight. None of the boss fights in that game are hard, but the entire run is about 20 to 25 minutes from what I remember. So getting to Tully, he's almost dead. He's taking damage and then boom, he hits me. I'm at full health. And I go down like 3 hearts and I just see my health shoot down. So he can 2-shot you essentially. And I remember my heart just jumping up really quick. And then I did get Tully and I did do the Deathless run. But I remember that moment because that was a pretty hype moment. And that was also a very fun game to master. So that's probably one of my favorite achievement moments.
For me, I have really think hard about this question, to be honest. I have an opinion way different than both of you. My opinion is I cannot like really like figure out what is the achievement I like the most and the less, for the reason of is for me it's almost like every achievement is a storyline. So everything have I put some feelings to it, I have put some times on it, and some example I would say like every achievement where I need to put time and progress. And you complete and succeed, like almost like progression styles. And you know, after like if you done everything about one games, you're gonna finish the games. So for me, it would be what I consider like the most successful stuff. And it's like another like I would just tell a quick story. There is like me and Vez, one of my friends, we decided to go crazy on 1 week, and we decided to do Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, the red ones. And we didn't know how much time we're gonna spend on. We wanted to do a race, and the first to master it would win. And me and him put 92 hours. It was 2 full weeks back, just playing back to back each days and trying to help each other's, like almost like a rivalry situation, because you don't want to lose. It's a race. We have plenty of time to doing it. It was doing that at the night just to try to get advantage. I gave him some advice. We both finish it. Like I lose the race because I was sleeping pretty much. That sounds pretty like okay. But overall, it's like those quiet moments for me was the most satisfying achievement to earn. And on every set I do, if I have a very like story, I could tell like many story old achievement I've done, and this is the most way for me to telling what I like the most, regardless to what I don't like the less. That one is I will always maybe will stick with my mind. My opinion is basically much like missables and the damageless, because I do when I play games. It's like, example, I want to pick up, example, any games or RPG, I'm always afraid to miss something. I'm always afraid to I want to have fun and explore a game. But if I know we need to redo the games a couple of times, I'm almost afraid to play those games because I don't want to lose, or which I don't know pretty much. And damages is the same way, because one, you need to learn the boss. Two, you don't know how much time you're going to spend on. And three, if you're really like me competitive a little bit much, if you're not doing well, you're not going to achieve anything and you would maybe not have the most fun to it. But that's pretty, rather than that, I don't know how to quite answer that question more. But yeah, I don't know what you feel about it.
It's definitely a difficult question to answer. When we first decided we were going to do this for Question of the Week, I really took some time to think about all, like you said, we have these little stories associated with these achievements, right? So I went back and I racked my brains and I thought about the stories that really stood out to me the most, those moments that were so big in my head. And one more favorite achievement I just wanted to give a shout out to real quick is this is an achievement by KDEX in Super Mario World titled Everything is Lava. If you guys have played the set, you know what I'm talking about. Get to the normal exit of 5-2 without touching any walls, enemies, or blue blocks. So 5-2 is the water level, the second level in the Forest of Illusion. And here's why I love this achievement so much. And this is why I love retro achievements so much. I love when achievements require you to play a game in a completely different way than you've ever played it before. And this achievement embodies that idea so well. I have played Super Mario World my entire life, and I have never thought, okay, I'm going to play this random water level, but I'm going to try not to touch any walls. I'm going to try not to touch any blocks. And like that would never even cross my mind. And even if it did cross my mind, I wouldn't have a good way of being able to test it. The reason this achievement works is because it immediately notifies you when you touch a wall or when you mess up. If you were playing that on original hardware, you know, there might be those moments where it's like, eh, did I touch a wall or not? It was kind of close. I'll say it doesn't count. So I feel like this achievement in particular just like perfectly encapsulates this idea of what retro achievements is all about. On the topic of least favorite achievements, I actually agree with what Draco said about missables. A particularly bad example for me was in Professor Layton and the Curious Village. There's an achievement for collecting all the hint coins in the game without using any of them. And I really had a bad experience with this achievement because, I mean, I don't want to hate on Spory's set. Spory's my friend and he made an awesome set. But this achievement, I unfortunately missed a missable, which is really easy to do if you aren't following a guide. And I ended up making it all the way to the end of the game and then having to play the entire game again in order to get that one achievement and master the set. So yeah, missables probably rank among most of my least favorite achievements, just for me personally.
Yeah, missables are definitely a sore spot. You know, as you play more titles, especially things that have a lot of RPG elements or tend to be longer titles, missables can definitely be a sore spot for a lot of people. And it's nice when they're marked and things like that. And even then, you know, sometimes if they're marked, if you just don't know the game and you're following a guide, it can really be something difficult to deal with. And speaking of, you know, difficult achievements or achievements that are among the least favorite, nothing against the authors, it's just they are what they are. You know, they're tougher achievements. They push you in ways that you've never pushed a game before. And I really think it's, you brought a lot of thoughts to mind, Bendy, with saying the idea, one of the core ideas of RA is playing games in ways that you might have never played them before. So I have a little bit of an interesting story behind that. So Final Fantasy VII, when achievements for PlayStation first came out in September, last year, that was one of the first titles, I believe, that came out for PlayStation that had achievements. And I really wanted to master the game. And all of the achievements had you do weird and unique things that were really cool, that pushed you. You know, don't use limit breaks on this boss. Only kill this boss using this. Beat this boss in without using this. Different rule sets that... I love Final Fantasy VII. I've probably played that game at least half a dozen times start to finish over the years. I don't have, you know, per se, the in-depth knowledge to do like the bonus set, which is absolutely monstrous and difficult, but well worth the points if you're willing to sink the time in. But for the regular set for Final Fantasy VII, the sticking point for me was this achievement, and I did end up mastering the title because I love it. With me, I'll always push in a title. If I love the title enough, I'll master it no matter how long it takes. It took me 2.5 months to master this entire title because I had work commute, things like that. Just got busy, tried my best, had to play it through 2 times. And the achievement is called David and Goliath. And the achievement description is as follows. Complete the game without anyone surpassing level 28. And if you know anything about Final Fantasy VII, you know that is no small task at all. So I did some research on this and started looking into it. And there are low-level runs, which are beat the game with the minimum amount of experience. The documentation is definitely a bit sporadic throughout the internet. I was following a guide that was developed about 15 years ago. And the guide was like, I remember one of my pain points with the guide was just like, the guide in one section would be like, oh, do this. And then like a couple paragraphs later, it'd be like, oh, but I did it this way, but do it, you can do it this way or this way. So it was kind of like ambiguous. And it was just broken up in a really, really weird way. So when I got to the end of the game, following the guide like step by step, or trying to kind of comb through the guide and just follow it as accurately as possible, I thought it was an absolute miracle that my party was the correct level and that I hadn't messed it up. And I can't see myself ever spending that long on a game again for quite some time, but it was very worth it and very satisfying at the end to complete the game in a very very unique way. I mean, I've never played Final Fantasy VII like that. Never will again. But as far as getting the achievement and nailing that one, that was a lot of fun to successfully execute, especially following something that was like a piece of documentation that was over 15 years old that was really broken up badly, in my opinion. So that's probably one of my least favorites achievement. Again, just because it was so crazy to have to figure everything out. I mean, I know a decent amount about Final Fantasy VII, but I thought I did, but I definitely know a lot more about that game now as far as like low level runs and the wild and crazy things, types of runs that people do. There's so many different ways to run that game that people still do to this day, even in 2020. And then the other least favorite achievement of mine would probably be, the achievement is called Don't Destroy So Much. It is from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Back from the Sewers for Game Boy. And the achievement is to reach the first boss, Rocksteady, with 1600 points and full life. Why is this achievement one of my least favorite achievements? Is because every enemy that you kill or bump into in that first stage gives you 100 points. So there's like, I think there's like three different areas the first level is broken up into. There's the initial part, and then there's the sewer part, and then maybe it's two areas. Maybe I'm misspeaking. Two or three areas. But anyway, each enemy you touch or kill gives you 100 points. Even if you bump into them and you don't kill them, it gives you 100 points. So this is like, you have to just keep jumping over enemies, know where all the enemies are. And the best way I found to do it is to just slowly walk. And then, you know, an enemy will populate on the screen and jump over it. It's not that bad up until this one point where you get into the sewers right before the boss. And there's this, there's like this infinite enemy spawn. And they just fall, they start walking forward. They fall, they start walking forward. And so what you have to do is you have to slowly jump forward and collect more of the screen. Like, collect isn't the right word, but advance slowly more in the screen so that you have enough screen to do, the harder you press A, the higher you jump. So you have to get kind of inch your way forward while dodging this infinite spawn enemy, like this infinite foot soldiers, and then get over them. And then you're good. Then you're good. Once you make it past that, there's 16 enemies exactly that you have to kill. So you kill them, and then you climb up, and there's a full light, or there's like a health thing waiting for you. But getting past that infinite enemy spawn and doing that jump perfectly was definitely pretty stressful, and also another unique way to play the level, you know, going back to the discussion of playing games in unique ways that they were not designed to be played, or that push you to do some unique challenges. That was definitely a unique one to figure out. I remember first doing it and I'm like, how am I going to do this? Like 1600 points. And then I remember the way figuring it out is where that forced part where you have to kill enemies after the pipe. I counted the exact number of enemies. I was like, okay, so there's 16 here. So you literally have to dodge every single enemy, even that infinite pipe spawn up until that point. So that was a pain point for me. I was really glad to put that one behind me and master that title. And, definitely a very, very unique achievement in itself.
Thanks. Thanks, Shoot and Bendy, for that great story there with your achievement. Congrats if you have made those as a success today. But I think that's all the time we have for you guys for today. Make sure to follow us on YouTube/our podcast. Make sure also to type what is your favorite racing game, because I'm very curious to see what you guys have choose. And make sure if you have another idea for a question of the week, make sure to let us know into the comment. Make sure also to hit the bell notification and put a like on this video. And thanks, Shoot and Bendy, again. And see you guys into another episode of our podcast. Bye, guys.